Hey, hey, have you heard? It's your host, Chris DeMakes, and I'm headed back to the Punk Rock Museum. That's right, the powers that be have invited me back, and I couldn't be more excited. Allow me to be your guide as we wind through 5 decades of punk rock history, merchandise, and memorabilia. Cinco de Mayo weekend, Friday, May 3rd, Saturday, May 4th, and Sunday, May 5th. There'll be 2 tours each day at 12:30 p.m. and 4 p.m. And the best part for me is you. Your stories, your questions, your experiences. Yep, some of you old punkers have taught this guy a thing or two on these tours, and I love it. Head over to thepunkrockmuseum.com for tickets. Don't miss out. Only 30 spots per tour. Get your tickets now at thepunkrockmuseum.com.
Hey friends, this was a really fun one. Today's guest is Eric Bazillion, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, arranger, producer, guitarist, and co-lead vocalist for the Philadelphia, Pennsylvania rock band, The Hooters. Eric and I dissect their breakout smash hit single, And We Danced, taken from their second album and major label debut from 1985, Nervous Night. These guys were truly ahead of their time. On the surface, to the casual listener, they may have just been another 80s pop band with keyboards, but this band was so much deeper than that. No one, and I mean no one, was starting off a hit single rock song in 1985 with a mandolin and melodica as the track's intro. Eric shares a fascinating story about writing the record with keyboardist and co-vocalist Rob Hyman, how the two of them packed up their guitars and headed for a geriatric resort in the Pocono Mountains, the thought being that there would be minimal distractions there. The results proved fruitful, as the pair wrote a ton of songs during their stay, And We Danced being one of them. And this episode is also rare for the fact that this song wasn't written in 5 minutes or almost cut from the album, something we've heard many times here regarding hit songs. In fact, it was very much the opposite. This song was an absolute labor of love to get perfect. The verses of the songs weren't even written and recorded until the album was in the mixing stages. Talk about down to the wire. For all this and some other musical surprises from Eric, don't you dare go anywhere.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast.
Eric, my man, how we doing?
Just great, thanks. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing fantastic. I want to thank you for sitting in. This podcast keeps tripping me out. The longer I do it, I get to talk to people that if you would have told me in 1985 I'd be talking to someone from the Hooters, I would have lost my mind. You guys were one of the bands that was the soundtrack to my youth. I was telling Chris, our producer, before the show began, that the first song I heard from you was All You Zombies. Which was played on 95 YNF out of Tampa, Florida, mm-hmm. Heavy rotation. That was my introduction to the band that drove me out to buy the cassette of Nervous Night.
Yeah, it's funny that song has really proven to be sort of the center of our signature of material. You know, and We Danced was a much bigger hit in the United States.
Yeah.
Johnny B was our big hit in Germany, 500 Miles in Sweden. But they all have All You Zombies in common. Even though it was never really a charted single, it mm-hmm. seems to be a song that seeped into the culture somehow.
Yeah, All You Zombies. I mean, you know, you guys had your own unique sound, but Zombies was just in its own league. Nothing sounded like that tune. Yeah. You know, you might be able to get And We Danced confused with another 80s keyboard song or something if you were just a casual listener of the Hooters, but not All You Zombies. That was its own monster.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of care went into the making of that record. You know, that was actually the first song that we wrote for the Hooters. That is the oldest surviving Hooters song. January 1980, we wrote that.
Yeah, and I know that there was a version on the first record, Amore.
Yeah, actually, there was We did a demo of it first in 80, a studio demo. Then we did a live radio broadcast from WMMR in Philadelphia, and we played that song, and they started playing the live recording like in heavy rotation. So that was our second single.
The trajectory of you guys when you started in 80 and what happened to you, and talking about MMR, we're going to get into this now. You know, you've had one heck of a career, and I'd like to share some of the highlights with the listeners right now. The Hooters were formed by Eric and Rob Hyman in 1980. In the early 80s, the Hooters played in the Philly club scene, boosted by airplay on WMMR, which Eric just mentioned, the major rock radio station in Philly. They became a huge success all throughout the East Coast. In 1982, they opened for one of the Who's farewell tour shows at JFK Stadium in Philly on a bill that also included The Clash and Santana, which we'll talk about that. And that's just fascinating. You weren't even on a major label. You got that gig. It just goes to show you the groundswell that was happening for the band. In 1983, the band released their first album, Amore, on independent label Antenna, and sold over 100,000 copies. That same year, Eric and Rob were asked to write, arrange, and perform on the debut album of then-unknown singer Cyndi Lauper's album She's So Unusual, which was being produced by their producer and friend Rick Chertoff. In July of 1984, the Hooters signed to Columbia. In 85, the debut album Nervous Night achieved platinum status, selling over 2 million copies. It included the songs Day by Day, which reached number 18, and We Dance, the song we're going to talk about today, which reached number 21. Rolling Stone named the Hooters the best new band of the year. The Nervous Night album was produced by Rick Chertoff, whose credits include the aforementioned Cyndi Lauper, as well as Sophie B. Hawkins' Damn, I Wish I Was Your Lover. In July 85, the Hooters were the opening band at the Philadelphia Live Aid benefit concert, gaining international recognition for the first time. In September of 1986, the Hooters appeared on the MTV Video Music Awards, where they were nominated in the category of Best New Artist in a Video for And We Danced. The band experienced commercial success in Europe in 1987 after heavy airplay of Satellite from the album One Way Home. In the 90s, the band's popularity overseas, especially in Europe, reached new heights. And in 93, the band released their MCA Records debut, Out of Body, which found a large audience in Europe, especially in Sweden and Germany, where Boys Will Be Boys, featuring Cyndi Lauper, became a huge hit. Since 2001, the band has reunited and played several shows and short tours. They've also recorded new albums such as Time Stand Still, which was released in September of 2007. Eric has become recognized internationally for being a songwriter, session musician, arranger, and producer for many artists. In 1995, he played all those roles for Joan Osborne's major label debut album, Relish, which was nominated for 6 Grammys, including Song of the Year for One of Us, which Eric wrote. To date, Eric has released 4 solo albums. So you have been a little busy. And it was awesome when we were going back and forth setting this up. You know, we had asked if we could do And We Dance. And you said, well, don't you want to do One of Us? That's like my biggest hit. I had no idea you wrote that. Congratulations. Well, so thanks. Cool.
And Rick Chertoff produced that.
Rick did that too. Yes, that's amazing that I didn't know about that, and which is an amazing song. That song is awesome. Talk about this a lot on this show. As you know, we have those memories that are attached to songs.
Sure.
And We Dance takes me right back to just being that kid and, you know, driving around in mom and dad's car listening to the Nervous Night album. So take us back to writing for the record. And do you remember writing And We Danced?
I actually have very clear memories of that. Yeah, that, you know, they say that the best songs write themselves.
Yeah,
that one did not.
Okay.
That was a labor of love. So, you know, as you mentioned, we got signed in 84, and we started lightening our touring load at that point to get ready for the album. You know, we had a lot of songs written, but we knew we really needed a new batch. You know, the band had been very ska and reggae oriented when we first started. And we wanted to keep those elements, but we just felt as though we were evolving into something different, you know, especially with the addition of a mandolin. I started playing mandolin and thought that might be a nice little element to try on the record. So Rob and I went away to write, to get away from, the, you know, home distractions.
Sure.
We went to a pretty much a geriatric resort in the Poconos. we were 50 years younger than anyone else there, which was great. The food was fine. And I set up my my four-track cassette recorder, my Tascam Porta Studio, which was sort of the go-to thing then.
Absolutely.
And my 808 drum machine, because I couldn't afford a Linn drum, which was, that was the one that sampled real drums. The 808, well, now, you know, that hip hop is based on the 808 drum.
Yeah. Machine. And everyone was using the Linn drums. I mean, yeah. Def Leppard, a lot of the big rock bands.
But I could only afford an 808. And it got the job done. So we sure. set up in a cabin, and we spent the week really just sort of free associating, just throwing a bunch of ideas at the wall, trying all kinds of wacky ideas, and actually sampling like the dialogue from the TV, and making little tracks around that. Our last night there, we went to see the house band. They had a band there, and the band was, they were amazing. I mean, the bass player, I don't think, was playing the same songs as the band at any time. You know, the singer always had to go for that, you know, the big note at the end. I mean, it was classic, you know, resort cheese ball
yeah.
stuff. And it was great. We'd go see them every night just for the fun of it. And on our way back to the cabin, we were walking and we talked about, maybe we should try writing a song just from a melody, because usually we write, you know, we start with it with a riff, a guitar riff, a keyboard riff, mm-hmm. chord progression. Let's just do a melody. Okay. So I have this thing about melodies. There are three kinds of melodies. There are melodies that start on the downbeat, like yesterday. You have melodies that start ahead of the beat. Oh yeah, I'll tell you something. Mm-hmm. Or that start after the beat. Nothing you can do that can't be done. Interesting, I'm giving you three beat examples of beating. So really, what yeah. else is there? And I've always been partial to melodies that go into the downbeat, that start before the band, because then the singer is telling the band what to play rather than the opposite. And it's interesting now, a lot of the pop songs today start after the downbeat because they're written by top liners, people who will get a track and, you know, they'll hear the chord and get, okay, this is what I'm going to sing. As opposed to the music being melody driven.
That's so interesting. I'm happy you brought that up because I can hear that now. And we dance, boom.
Yep.
That's so awesome.
So those three notes. Da da da. Okay. Da 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 da. Okay, what next? Da 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 da. We just fashioned that whole melody in a 5-minute walk. And then I don't remember which one of us said the words and we dance, but one of us said it and it was like, yep, that's going to start the chorus. So we got back to the cabin and we made a little demo and it was very different from what you know, what we know as And We Dance. It had sort of like an 808 calypso beat and I played it on mandolin and Rob played it on something on his keyboard. And we had the verse and we had the bridge. The endless beat, da 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 da, hear the music fade.
Yeah.
And the verses were completely different. So when we returned from our trip and we played our body of work for Rick, I could see him sort of squirming, you know, as we went from track to track, you know, you go, oh, well, that part's interesting. Oh, okay, yeah, we might be able to find something in there. And then the last thing we played was And We Danced. And I could just see this huge relief come over him. And he was like, okay, now we can do some business.
Nice.
You know, so at the time, you know, with the Hooters, in the early days of the Hooters, I've sort of made a conscious sacrifice of my guitar shredding ways, because in the band that Rob and I had before the Hooters, Baby Grand, it was sort of a prog Steely Dan on steroids thing. And I was hoping to get paid by the note.
That doesn't always happen.
I mean, it was very, you know, technically very advanced and some might even say accomplished, But with the Hooters, I decided we're going to put the song first. Any sounds that we make need to be interesting and unique. So I wasn't really doing the rock guitar thing so much, which was a huge sacrifice for me because that's really what I come from. But one day in one of our pre-production rehearsals with me and Rob and Rick, Rob just put up a rock beat on his little Casio. Boom, da, boom, boom, da, boom, da, boom, boom. And I remember, and I started fiddling around with the guitar. And I remember Rick Chertoff saying to me, "Eric, do you think you could turn that guitar up and make it sound like Eric?" So, okay. And then, you know, the guitar riff came out, the verse riff, which I'm very proud of. It's a bear to play. It's this weird arpeggiated riff, which starts with a suspended D over an A, and I won't bore you with the details. She was a bebop baby on a hard day's night. She was hanging on Johnny, he was holding on tight. Well,
I know it's hard to sing and play that at the same time. I tried.
I do it every night.
It's tough.
It's actually easier to sing it if I'm playing it and easier to play it if I'm singing it. So we did a demo of that. And then that's when I remember when we got to the bridge, which goes to that B minor, E sus, E, A with a third in the bass, D. I had this idea. I said, why don't we use that chord progression for the intro? And I'm going to play it on the mandolin.
Awesome.
So that I can grab my mandolin if you'd like.
I would love that.
Oh, let me grab that. Hold on.
Absolutely. Awesome.
Oh, it's right behind me here.
You don't have to edit this. It's just right behind them. This is perfect. No edits.
What's that?
I was just saying to the listeners, I said, we don't even have to edit this. The mandolin's right behind him.
I always keep a mandolin handy. I hope it's in tune. So I literally picked it up and I went, how about something like this? And everybody went, yeah. And then came I don't have a melodica here. My melodica is out in the studio, but then came out and thus was Hooterization born.
Man, I got full body goosebumps right now, man. That is so cool. Thank you for sharing that. And when you started strumming that mandolin, man, that was just, that hit me right in the heart, man. Thank you for sharing that. That was, and who the hell else was starting a song with a mandolin and a melodica? Who?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, REM tried it with the mandolin. A few years later.
I think 91. That was a number of years after you. But something you mentioned that I don't think anybody, and maybe non-musicians might have a hard time wrapping their head around this one. Even some musicians, it's so hard to be a player that can rip on the guitar and be an advanced musician or into prog to dumb it down and go, I'm just going to write a simple pop song. That's very difficult to do. It's easier to go the other way. Go, yeah, I kind of know this pop stuff. I'm going to try to be an accomplished player.
Right. And of course, there's nothing easy or simple about how we danced.
Yeah.
I've seen cover bands try to do it and
butcher it.
It's tough.
Yeah.
I mean, the bass part, which I played on there, to me, it was intuitive. But, most bass parts, they'll land on the downbeat. It would be bum, bum, bum. Bum, but for me, it's bum, 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 ba, 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 ba. The chord changes are landing before the beat, and the bass is doing that, but then it's also doing the downbeat, so it's with the kick drum.
Mm-hmm.
And then, it's very melodic. It's got that, hold on, I'll show you.
Yes.
I'll show you on the very bass with which it was recorded.
Oh, that is too cool. For the listeners right now, I'm seeing what appears to be a kitchen, a phone hanging on the wall, and Eric just walked into a bedroom and grabbed a bass. Here he comes.
Okay, so it's the chorus. Can you hear it?
I can.
So the chorus goes. So it's very melodic.
Yes, yes.
It's not just playing the chord. So again, you've got this fabric, this interwoven fabric of musical parts that are, doing this making this beautiful soup.
Well, I mean, you mentioned the Beatles earlier. I love songs that if you strip away everything and just listen and zone in on the bass, that the bass is its own tune. And this song has that. I had that written here. I was going to discuss it with you, that the bass line is its own little animal.
Yep. And, you know, the devil really is in the details with that.
Yeah.
You've got to get it right. If one note is wrong, the whole thing falls apart.
Yeah, yeah. No, and that bass just keeps it moving. Well, I want to jump into to the song right now. You know, 3 minutes and 48 seconds long, perfect timing for like pop radio, just right there. The first 12 seconds of the tune are the mandolin and the melodica. Again, who was putting those two instruments together? It just had its own sound. When this came on, I mean, you know, I went and watched the live videos. The minute that happens, the audience loses their mind. They know what's coming. It's the hit, you know? At 13 seconds, there was a spirited vocal, the first we hear in the song, of a like a wow that comes in.
Yep.
And the band kicks in with guitars, bass, drums, and keyboards for three measures, the whole band. And it stops at the end of this to just a single guitar playing the three notes.
Okay, hold on.
Yes, he's going to grab the guitar now, I think. Now you're going to tell me this is the original guitar from the recording.
No, that's out in the studio.
Okay.
This is the acoustic I played on the Joan Osborne record, though.
That's killer. So cool.
You know, Rob and I did a gig last night, yesterday. Was it yesterday? No, Monday and Tuesday with Cindy. With Cindy Lauper in New York.
Oh, that's...
This is why my acoustic instruments happen to be in the house and not in the studio. And the bass is in the house because at 2 o'clock this morning, I just hadn't had an idea and recorded something. And I didn't feel like going out to the studio. So I just did it in the kitchen with my laptop. But so you're talking about those three notes from And We Danced.
Yes. That happens one more time in the song, and we'll get to that. That little hook with, again, you said the devil in the details. That little thing right there, that hook, it's three notes, but it just... It makes the verse what it is.
I mean, it's funny. I have a very vivid memory of coming up with all the guitar parts.
Yeah.
On that. And
do you recall if those three single notes were in the demo, or was that something that you did in the studio, or Rick, the producer, or Rob suggested?
That I suggested that. It was my idea to have a bar of six, a bar of six beats, and those notes. Yeah. You know, other musicians, producers might have looked askance at that. You can't have a bar of six, but yes, you can.
I love that it's six, and I love that it goes to the three noter, and then you're in the first. It should be jarring, but it's not. But it's not traditional. It's not boring at four. It's not too little at two. It's perfect.
Right, right. And then, you know, Burt Bacharach, one of the greatest pop songwriters of all time, the time signatures in some of his songs are insane.
The moment I wake up, before I put on my makeup, I say a little prayer for you. Walk home in my hair now. And
every morning I wake up, da 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 da. I say a little prayer for you. You know, I think that was a bar of seven.
Yeah, I've always loved that non-traditional songwriting and wish I could do more of it. When I try to do it, it seems forced. There's, again, those three notes that you have coming there at the end of that kind of transitions you there, you know?
Yep.
It may have felt jarring without that.
She was a feed by baby on a hard day's night. She was hanging on Johnny, he was holding on.
Don't really know what this means. I want you to set this up. She was a bebop baby on a hard day's night. She was hanging on Johnny. He was holding on tight. Oh, I could feel her coming from a mile away. There was no use talking. There was nothing to say. when the band began to play and play. You know, I noticed the Johnny reference in here. Of course, you had a big hit with Johnny B. I believe on the, was that on the next record, One Way Home? Wow. Is it the same Johnny?
Could be. It might be the same Johnny as Johnny B. Good, for all we know.
Okay, okay.
So there's a lot of Johnny in rock and roll.
This first verse kind of breaks down to guitars, bass, and drums. Not a breakdown, but kind of gets smaller than the intro with all the keyboards and everything. The clean, overdriven guitar here, it sounds like a Strat to me in the verses.
We really worked on a guitar sound for that.
It's awesome.
And we have a very, very consistent rhythm guitar sound. That was a 1960 Les Paul Jr., which is, aside from one overdub on And We Danced, the only guitar played on that album.
No kidding.
And the amp setup for the rhythm guitars, rather than double tracking, which I'm really good at, but we wanted to try not having to do that. So Bill Whitman, who engineered the record, the brilliant William Whitman, who also engineered Cindy, Joan, produced The Outfield, their hits.
Oh, that's great. Love their records too.
He brought in it was an Ibanez dual chorus pedal. And I happened to have two Marshalls. One was a 50, one was a 100, but they were the same model, the same kind of circuitry. Just one had four output tubes and one had two. So we tried running the two amps in stereo. And I found that if I plugged the guitar into the low gain input and cranked the amp, it got a crunch, just on the edge of crunch, but not distortion.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that if I tweaked the levels, the level and tone on the guitar, like if I went from 10 to 8.5 and the tone just down to 9, it was a subtle but audible difference. So, That was my toolbox for that whole record. And honestly, that Junior, that's still the go-to guitar for Hooters recording. And I play that guitar live.
Yeah. That I saw you play that guitar live, and that's so cool. Again, I got the Marshall part right, but I thought that was a Strat. That's really cool. It was a Les Paul Junior.
In my hands, a Les Paul Junior sounds like a really good Telecaster.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Okay. Yeah, the Strat's cousin. What's going on with these lyrics here? Where were you coming from? What were you saying here?
Okay, so we started the song sometime in the summer of '84. We cut the track in October of '84. Cut the with the drums, bass. Got the whole track sounding amazing, recorded the chorus, recorded the bridge, didn't have any verses. We kept trying verses, verse after verse after verse, nothing stuck. And finally, we were mixing the album and we had all these songs that didn't have any vocals, didn't have any verse vocals.
Hey, don't go anywhere. Krista Makes a Podcast will be right back after a few words from our sponsors.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen and wherever you get your podcasts.
This week on the After Party Podcast, we dive into some of the most iconic synth riffs of the 80s.
You know, what I thought was pretty funny about this is that this song, you said 1984 this song came out, right?
Yeah.
But Eddie wrote that synth line in 1981, but the rest of the band was like, no way. But then it was years later that it came back around.
Yeah, David Lee Roth didn't want anything to do with this song initially. But, you know, it became arguably one of their biggest songs ever. And again, without that keyboard line, and I've seen cover bands try to do it with a guitar. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. Hey, in case you're interested, Chris, in case you're going through your plugins and you really like that sound, the keyboard used on this is an Oberheim OB-XA. And Daryl Hall is quoted as once saying that Eddie told him that he copied the synth part from Kiss on My List and used it in Jump. But Daryl said, I don't have a problem with that at all. Daryl Hall's always seemed like the really cool guy in the Hall & Oates.
Nice. You're digging up some cool little history here, little facts. I've never heard that either.
Yeah, did you? If you'd like to hear this whole episode, plus a huge back catalog of episodes of The After Party, head over to ChrisDeMakes.com and sign up for our supporting cast program. And now, on with the show.
We were recording in New York at the record plant, and we weren't allowed to go home weekends. At this point, we had to isolate and write the damn songs.
Well, talk about your back against the wall. You're in the mixing stages at this point.
Yeah. I mean, we're going uptown to Atlantic Studios, where Bill's mixing, and then we're coming back to the record plant in Midtown, where John Aniello is engineering. So it was a Saturday, and what we did was, rather than having to have the whole team to come in, I just took stereo bounces of the track and put them on my four track, my trusty Tascam 244.
Yeah.
And we would sit there with an SM57 and try different ideas. And I think Rob had gone up to go to the bathroom or take a phone call or something, and I heard the voice of Robert Palmer, of all people, in my head. I think the song is called John and Mary.
Johnny says he's willing to learn when he decides he's a fool. Johnny says he'll live anywhere when he owns time. Mary comes ahead.
And he's singing in octaves. Da 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 da. Something along those lines. And I just heard the line da 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 in that octave. So before Rob came back, I recorded da 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 and da 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 da.
Yeah.
He came in, put the headphones on, and he said, "Yep, let's work with that." So the Bebop Baby just the words literally just came out. We had no idea what they're about. They're not based on personal experience, I don't think. I mean, looking at the song from as an observer, I guess, you know, the first verse is about, it's a narrator talking about a guy named Johnny who sees this girl who is referred to as a bebop baby mm-hmm. on a hard day's night, meaning in this case, I guess, you know, after work. And she's with another guy named Johnny. Johnny is not the protagonist.
Yes. Okay.
She was hanging on Johnny. He was holding on tight. So Johnny was holding on tight to her because he didn't want to let her get away because he knew that she was way out of his league. Then it switches. And it's funny because that's where my vocal comes in. Rob sings the first two lines, mm-hmm. which was just coincidence. Then I come in. I could feel her coming from a mile away. There was no use. So obviously I, the protagonist of the song, is taken by this girl and is determined to get her away from Johnny. So, should we go to the second verse?
I want to go to chorus one. Well, we're going to go in chronological order, but I do want to talk about the last three lines here, the harmonies that come in. And the harmonies are great. They are so, I'll use the word subtle. They're not overbearing. They're just kind of there. But man, that makes the part. And I always loved the dual vocal thing you and Rob had going on. I think that was so interesting and such an integral part to your sound.
Yeah, well, you know, to find someone that you have a vocal blend like that with is magical.
Yeah, yeah, and I hope we don't lose your train of thought in the second verse. We are going to get there, but I want to get into chorus one as we go chronologically here. It's at the sweet spot. 1 minute into the song, exactly, you're in the chorus. The chord progression from the top of the song, the chorus with the guitar, bass, drums, keys, the hook. Here, you're 30 seconds later from that. You're the first verse was however long, and now you're hearing it again, but with the vocal. And we danced, like a wave on the ocean romanced. We were liars in love and we danced. Swept away for a moment by chance, and we danced and danced and danced. Harmonies on all four lines. Killer. Where'd that lyric come? You got that from the up in the Poconos? Was that something you referenced up there?
That was from the first night. Yep. That was just words. Again, it was words that sounded good and seemed to make sense.
Oh, man. Do you know how many people try to write stories like this in songs that just... It's an art form, and it's just something I love when I get someone on here that says what you said. Oh yeah, this wasn't about an ex-girlfriend or my heart broken. This was just some words we put down.
You know, most of the songs that we write, certainly that I write, are based on something deeply personal.
Yeah,
and you know, a lot of my songwriting is very therapeutic.
Sure.
You know, I learn things about myself that I didn't know before.
That's a trip. I've never had anybody say that on the show after a year and a half, and I've never thought of it in those terms, but that's really profound what you said there. You don't even realize the self-therapy you're getting sometimes.
I've had songs come out that have kind of scared me.
Uh-huh.
You know, that I haven't listened to since.
Like, where the heck did this come from?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it gives one, you know, pause to think, and then I tell my therapist about it. Now, see, this is interesting because an interesting situation, because Rob and I, Hooters songs traditionally are songs that we write together. So it needs to be a shared perspective. We never really went the Lennon and McCartney route where, you know, Paul would bring in songs, John would bring in songs. It just, mm-hmm. you know, I write plenty of songs on my own, and occasionally they become Hooters songs. If it feels like, and we both know when it's right, when it's something that feels like a Hooters song. It could be the greatest song in the world. I mean, you know, One of Us, great song, not really a Hooters song. Time After Time, which Rob wrote, great song. And even though we play it in the Hooters and we've recorded it with the Hooters, it's not really a Hooters song.
Yeah, that's that band dynamic, that thing that you guys have together. It's a special thing. Verse two, and I want to continue with your thoughts on verse one because it's really really interesting the protagonist antagonist dynamic here. I met my bebop baby at the Union Hall. She could dance all night and shake the paint off the wall. But when I saw her smile across a crowded room, yeah. Well, I knew we'd have to leave the party soon as the band began to play out of tune. I'm assuming you're referencing that horrible resort band.
See, I had never thought of that. I would never in a million years have thought of that. Thank you. See, I'm still learning about this song 36 years later.
That's awesome.
Again, as I've never really analyzed the song before, so this is a great opportunity for me as well.
Oh, thank
as
you.
As an observer, I guess it's about, you know, it's about getting lost in the moment.
Yeah.
Literally swept away by the moment for the moment by chance. You know, it's this encounter, this unexpected encounter with this person. And you know, seeing her across the crowded room, Union Hall probably there was a little bit of Springsteen in that, because, you know, he liked imagery like that. And, you know, I was a big fan. I mean, I'm still a big fan, but I listened to a lot of Bruce back in the day.
I love Bruce, and I hear a very spirited Bruce, at the end of this song. You or Rob lets out. I'm not sure who did it, but I'm like, wow, that kind of sounds like Bruce there.
Honestly, that's one song I would love to hear Bruce sing.
Yeah, that'd be really cool.
He would nail that.
Maybe you have to present it to him. That's really cool. I'd love to hear him saying that. Again, I want to talk about these harmonies in the last three lines here, the second verse. I love on the line, but when I saw her smile across a crowded room, there's harmonies on all of that, except you do this little yeah at the end there. No harmony on the yeah. It just makes it personal.
Rick or Bill, someone in the control room said, hey, can you put a little something in there? And I said, yeah, I got it. And so I got to do the yeah.
That's cool. Well, we go right into chorus two. Pretty much the same as chorus one, at least the first half. And we danced like a wave on the ocean romanced. We were liars in love and we danced. Swept away for a moment by chance. And we danced and danced and danced. And then the chorus continues for two more measures. Halfway through measure one, there's a yeah. And at the start of measure two, there's just one and we danced. And then very briefly, the melodica comes back in for a half a measure. It's really weird there. Whose idea was that? How'd that come about? It's really neat.
Well, again, the melodica and mandolin idea was my idea to play the intro changes, to play that melody over the intro, not the intro, I'm sorry, the bridge changes.
Right.
The bridge came from the Poconos.
Ah, okay.
I think, and even lyrically, I think originally it might've been the Endless Beach. That something else, but the end was definitely the room is spinning, she whispers my name.
Okay.
Yeah. So again, we're kind of, that's really where it started, was playing that melody over the bridge changes.
Well, I love that the second half of the chorus, it stops with most of the lyrics. It's just musically, but it feels so good that you don't even need the lyrics there. And like these little, yeah. And then you have the one and we danced, melodica briefly comes in, and then you get hit with the three-note guitar arpeggio. It happens again here, like before verse one, the only other time in the song it happens. So perfectly placed. Was it there on like the demos, or was that like, hey, you know what? We should put that thing from the top of the song back in here.
By the time we got into tracking the album, it was there. By the time we got into tracking, we had the entire arrangement. All the guitar parts, all the keyboard parts were mapped out. Bass parts, what even, you know, what we wanted on the drums.
It's so simple. We're talking about six notes. Three of the notes are the same. That's the same part, just in different spots. But I can't imagine this song without that little hook.
Yep. And that is, you know, that instrumental bridge, the instrumental chorus before the bridge, you know, is where, you know, Rob gets to shine with that elegantly simple genius keyboard riff.
Yes. Yes.
Where you know, we add the bells there.
Oh, the keyboard riff is just, it's so perfect. It's so 80s. But and I say that with all my heart. It's so good. It's so perfect. The start of the bridge is basically the reintro for two measures. You got the mandolin and the melodica, but the bass is there with a single note guitar mimicking the mandolin. I love that.
Yeah.
And the breakdown there is, it breaks down drum wise to just a kick and a hi-hat during that part.
Yep.
The single note guitar mimicking the mandolin, was that a demo idea, or was that something that you're like, you know, Rick or someone said, hey, you should chase that mandolin with a guitar?
I think I just played that naturally while we were tracking it. It's kind of like, where's the guitar player go? during this part.
Yeah, is he going to strum chords? You already got the mandolin doing that.
Yep, and it plays great. Right, those are the harmonics.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Neck bend.
Yeah. Yeah, as you said, what the hell is the guitar going to do here? Oh, it's going to do this.
And then it continues, you know, it answers the vocal, you know. The endless beat, she's walking my way.
Yes.
Music fade.
That is awesome. Well, the second half of the bridge, the drums now kick in. The melodica drops out.
The end is beat. She's walking my way. Hear the music thin when she says, are we getting too close? Do we dare to get closer? The room is spinning and she whispers my name and we dance.
The endless beat. She's walking my way. Hear the music fade when she says, are we getting too close? Do we dare to get closer? The room is spinning as she whispers my name. The harmonies on here come in on the third line, just on the back half of it. We dare to get closer. And then on the last line, the room is spinning as she whispers my name. Love the harmonies there. The harmonies, more than anything, intrigue me, I think, because of placement. And every band's different. You're like, why here? Why weren't there harmonies on the first two lines? I could see them being there, you know, but perfect. Did you have most of these harmonies, do you recall, mapped out prior to the studio? You did.
Yep.
You did.
We absolutely did. I mean, the thing is, Rob and I both want to sing all the time.
Two alpha male singers.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, actually, in our case, I think two beta male singers, because neither of us ever thought of ourselves as a singer before this band. Still have trouble wrapping my head around it sometimes.
I get paid to do this? What?
But we had all that mapped out. It's interesting now. So the bridge lyrically, again, looking at it as an observer, this is the denouement of the drama. They're together. They've left the party, and she's hesitant. She's not sure about it, you know. Do we dare to get closer? But then she whispers his name and the room begins to spin. Mm-hmm. So I had the feeling it goes down.
Yeah, well, and of course it was the 80s. The room could have been spinning because he was hitting the punch bowl a little too much.
Right.
Again, I love that you're talking about this in terms of, because again, these were just a story that you were jotting down. This wasn't personal experience, but now you're looking into the glass bowl here and going, yeah, you know what? The room's spinning. She whispers his name and you know, everything's kind of coming alive for this guy.
I mean, it really is a universal story for any gender or any persuasion, but you know, you go someplace, you see somebody you like, they're with somebody else. Maybe they're not so into that person. I'm going to make a move and it works.
Well, the last chorus, chorus three, it's a double chorus lyrically before it starts to fade out.
She whispers my name and we dance, like a wave on the ocean romance. We were liars in love and we danced, swept away for a moment by chance. Yeah, we danced, danced and we danced, like a wave on the ocean romance. We were liars in love and we danced, swept away for a moment.
And we dance, like the wave on the ocean romanced. We were liars in love and we danced, swept away for a moment by chance. Yeah, we danced and danced and danced. And the yeah there instead of and. I like that subtle change. It was a yeah there. It continues on. And we danced, like the wave on the ocean romanced. We were liars in love and we danced. On that line right there, second half of the chorus, "We were liars in love and we danced," the harmony changes there.
We were liars in love and we danced.
Yes, that's killer. I'm assuming you had it mapped out. You knew you wanted to do that there.
I think so. I think so. And I honestly don't know which one of us that was on the record. I know now I'm the one that does that live.
You know what I love about doing this podcast? It's just so exciting to me. Is I've probably heard this song, Eric, 1,000 times over the years. You still hear it at the grocery store, everywhere you go. But I'm deconstructing the song, and that part comes up. I'm like, why does this sound different? I got to go back to the other chorus. I'm like, the harmony change. Just that little harmony there.
Yes, you're a completist.
to a fault.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
I love that. It continues on, "Swept away for a moment by chance, and we danced and danced." You say danced 9 times. And then there's an "oh, woo, and we danced." And we danced, oh. And then there's a "ah." And we danced with a "come on, baby" that you say.
Yeah, Rob's the "come on, baby."
Rob's the "come on, baby."
He's the "ah" on the "ooh."
Yeah. Okay. Then we keep going. And around this time, the song, it's a slow fade for about 46, 47 seconds. It's a very subtle at the beginning of that fade, a great fade out. And again, it happens again. And we dance 9 more times with a "hey." And then the "yeah, ah, oh," which I think that was where it sounded a little Springsteen there. I'm like, it's a little tip of the hat to Bruce. "And we danced." And then there's also in between all of this, as we're fading out, and the last thing you hear in the song is "And We Danced," which is great. It's the title of the tune. But there's this cool little guitar run that happens twice in the fade out. It's this little 6-noter. It's a little run.
You mean the run that happens at the end of every chorus?
Correct, but it's really pronounced on the fade out. Yeah. The two
actually,
times
that happens. That happens in the middle of every chorus, and the bass also plays it.
You're right. But the vocals are there. Now I'm really hearing it at the end when everything is sparse and the vocals are coming in and out. But that's just such a killer. Again, another hook in an already insanely hooky song. Can you take us back, Eric, to, because again, I mean, it's amazing. I talked at the top of the show here about you guys opening for The Who at JFK Stadium in 82. You didn't even have your first independent record out. Here you put a record out, it sells 100,000 copies. This is pre-internet. This is crazy what happened to you guys. I think it shows the depth of talent that you had, but you hadn't had a hit up to this point. And now, I mean, of course, time after time with Cindy and Rick, you were starting to taste it, but this was your first thing, the Nervous Night, your first hit record.
Yep.
Did you know the song was a hit when you're hearing the playback of the mixes for the first time? Did it hit you like, holy crap, we have something here?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think we knew early on that if we could write some verses, we could have a hit song.
I'm not going to lie. You've inspired me to grab my bass player and head up to the Poconos. I don't know if we'd end up killing each other after 3 days or come up with a batch of great songs, but that's an interesting story that you guys decided to take off together and go do that. And it resulted in some great material.
We've done that a bunch. In fact, we are trying to figure out a way to do that again, because as time goes on, it gets harder and harder to work at home, even though, you know, I've got a studio in my backyard. Rob's got like a real studio. But, you know, you have families, you've got friends, you've got stuff going on. I mean, you know, you really do need to get into a space where you can clear your head.
Yeah. Leave the cell phone in the other room and get down to business.
Yeah. I mean, we wrote Johnny B in West Virginia and a cabin in West Virginia. We wrote Satellite. Actually, that we wrote in our rehearsal studio in Philadelphia. Private Emotion, which was on Out of Body. Feel the light, and wherever you may find it, wherever it may lead, let your private emotion come to me. Never did much for us, but it was a pretty significant hit for Ricky Martin. We wrote in Antigua. As the shadows steal.
Wherever it may lead, let your body. That's incredible. Well, listen, Eric, we're going to wrap up here. I want to thank you so much. You know, I had thought of you, and Chris, my producer, he went online, immediately found an email address for you. It was within that same day you wrote him back and said, I'd love to come on the show. I was doing backflips. I was just ecstatic.
Oh.
Thank you so much for being part of the soundtrack of my youth and still soundtrack of my life. Right now, I'd like you to let the listeners know what you got going on before we head off here.
The Hooters are still very active. Generally, we tour Germany every summer for a month or two. 2020, we would have done our 40th anniversary tour, but we all know what happened to that year. And we were hoping that it would be 2021, but that didn't work out. So now it's scheduled for next summer, summer 22. And we end up in Stockholm, which is my other home. I live between Philadelphia and Stockholm, Sweden.
That's so awesome. Of course, you had a huge hit in Sweden in 93 with the Out of Body record. So that's
yep.
That's
cool. And 500 Miles was, you know, I think I mentioned earlier, that's our most well-known song in Sweden. Aside from the band, actually, we just played a gig in Harrisburg, PA this weekend. And I do solo records. I put one out this year called Bazillion, honestly, because I couldn't think of a better title. And then when I realized that McCartney had called three albums McCartney, I thought, okay, why not? And that record I recorded mostly in my basement in Stockholm with a laptop and one good mic and one guitar and a mandola and so a couple of really good drummers who were able to record themselves for me.
That's cool. Well, before we go, where can the listeners best place to find Eric Bazillion online?
Well, you can go to ericbazillion.com, which is a landing pad, or you can just go on Spotify and type in Eric Bazillion and you'll see my stuff come up.
Awesome, man. Well, again, from bottom of my heart, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much. This was really, really a lot of fun.
There's lots more Chris DeMakes a Podcast after a few words from our sponsors.
This is the story of Whitney Houston.
This is the story of Kurt Cobain.
Of George Michael, of Otis Redding, of Amy Winehouse, of Michael Hutchence, Bob Marley. This is the story of Prince.
It's a new podcast series.
About how they died, why they died, and while we're still talking about them so long after.
It's like nothing you've ever heard before.
It's storytelling.
But it's more than that, because rock stars,
they tell us how we feel. They change our mood.
They change the clothes we wear, the people we hang out with,
the way we remember things.
It's them who give us those ludicrous moments, the ones where you're
jumping around, singing your heart out, feeling understood.
And it's those moments we'll help you remember, the ones you're thinking about right now.
That feeling.
That feeling.
It's coming soon from Crowd Network.
Just search for Death of a Rockstar on your podcast app
and subscribe now.
Do you enjoy the content and production of Krista Makes a Podcast? Do you have an idea for a podcast or an existing podcast that you'd like to take to the next level? Well, check out weknowpodcasting.com. At weknowpodcasting.com, we have over 25 years of combined experience in the pod field, and we're ready to help you succeed in the golden era of podcasting.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Krista Makes a Podcast, all you have to do is email your song via MP3 only and your bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured artist is The False Starts from Royal Oak, Michigan. The band is comprised of just one guy, multi-instrumentalist Dylan Foley. You can find their music on Spotify, iTunes, and SoundCloud. Here's a snippet of their song, Nothing Ever Works.
I can't start it. I can't take it. I got a feeling we're all just faking it. Just restart it. Just restart it. Just restart it.
Nothing ever works.
Maybe it's just me. I bite my lip until it hurts.
Rap with Chris and Chris.
Oh, man, did I love that episode. That was awesome, man. I came into this episode knowing, and we danced, of course. You knew a lot more of the Hooters catalog, but then learning more about him and learning that he wrote One of Us and learning his involvement in the Cyndi Lauper She's So Unusual album and just listening to him talk about music, I just became such a huge Eric Bazillion fan.
Yeah, I'll echo that sentiment times 10. Out of nowhere, he goes, let me grab the mandolin. Oh, let me grab the bass that was actually played on the recording. And he walks back into another room. I can see him walk off camera, brings the acoustic out and starts jamming. What a wonderful, wonderful person.
I really like, Chris, that this went away from the norm of people coming on here and being like, ah, I wrote that song in 5 minutes. Where I thought he was going to say that, but then he flipped the script on us and was like, this was not that. This was a labor of love. They put a lot of thought and time into this song, down to not having the verses of the song when the song is already, when the song was already basically in the mixing stage?
They're in the mixing stages and they don't have verse lyrics or vocals on the verses. Yeah, and that's when he was fumbling with his four-track. But the other story that I love, you got to remember, this is mid-80s. A lot of people were partying their tails off back then. These two guys decided to take off to a resort in the Poconos. That could have been disastrous for Ozzy and his band or somebody. Somehow they were able to get work done up there and have a story to tell about it that was hilarious. They're in the lounge seeing this horrible band every night, but they were having the time of their lives.
I love that, and I do really believe in the going somewhere and writing, getting away from the distractions of being at home and going to a cabin, going to the Poconos, going to a cabin in West Virginia, like he cited, going to an island somewhere. I think that is, it's very good for writing.
It is, and the distractions now are more so than they've ever been with social media. Everyone's carrying around a cell phone with them. I mentioned that to Eric, where I don't think it's the worst idea to do that, to go write somewhere and get away from it all.
I loved when he talked. We haven't never had anyone talk about this, and I've never even thought about this before, but I loved that he talked about the three different types of melodies, like the way that the melody starts.
Yeah,
that was really interesting, man. And he cited three different Beatles songs. That was so cool.
Exactly. And then as soon as he started talking about that, I went, oh, I get where he's going with this. You know, it's, and we danced, and then the beat hits. You know,
right?
The lyric comes in before the downbeat of the chorus. Like, wow, I've never thought about that either.
Yeah, the melody is leading the way.
Yeah, yeah. He talked about the bass in this song, which we talked about, which is just, it's its own little piece of music within this grand scheme of a song of music. It's so cool.
You know that I appreciate the attention to detail on bass.
Yeah,
of course. So I really appreciated that. I loved when he picked up the bass and started playing. Yeah, that is awesome. That's very important. Love when a song doesn't just rely on the root notes. I'm a bassist. I'm a little partial to that. But even, we've talked about this so many times, Chris, but even when you might not necessarily zone in on that bass line, if it's a badass bass line, it just takes the song to a whole nother level.
No, you know, and I've had some of my friends, my heroes on this show, other musicians that I've met that I've become a huge fan of from being on the show. And you know, this show's introduced me to their music. But I'll tell you, Eric's kind of at the top of the list for someone that I'd like to write a song with. He's just, this guy's magical.
Dude, I told you this off mic, but while you guys are recording this, I'm texting Steve from my band and being like, dude, we got to get Eric Bazillion to produce Punchline. He's in Philly. Well, some of the time, I guess he goes between Sweden and Philly, but he's a Philly guy. And, you know, 1/4 of Punchline lives in Philly. Even if he produced a song, I just feel like just talking to him and knowing the music that he's worked on and made, I just feel like he'd be the perfect match for us. So
And just the little things of him. I say little. This is such an integral part of the song, but that three note thing we were talking about, the detail in which he talked about those three notes. This guy knows what he's talking about. He does. He's just an amazing songwriter.
Absolutely, man. I love this episode. And I mean, I thought I was going to like the episode. I like the song and everything, but I didn't know I was going to love it this much. Man, I got so much respect for Eric Bazillion.
Yeah, I do too. Man, when he got the mandolin out and he started strumming, that was the first instrument he started playing. Full body goosebumps. I mean, I've had it a couple times on the show, but man, that was I had like an out of body experience. Again, it took me right back. I've said it before, driving to the Little League game with my dad. I can smell my dad's cigar. I'm right back in Port Charlotte, Florida, Herald Avenue at the Little League fields, listening to friggin' And We Danced. It's unreal.
It sounded beautiful. It made me want to go get a mandolin. I got to learn how to play the mandolin.
Yeah, I can't say enough about this one. I'm with you, Chris. I thought it was going to be good, but it turned out better than I ever could imagine.
Yeah, man. And you know what turned out better than I would have ever imagined? Your new 7-inch.
Thank you, Chris. I really appreciate that. That's right. I got a brand new 7-inch record. This is the third one in a series, 3 of 3, that relates all back to the book, Blast from the Past, that I released in 2020. And this new 7-inch has 2 songs on it. One is called In Memoriam, and the other one is called 2 Minutes to Bus Call. We played 2 Minutes to Bus Call on last week's show, but In Memoriam deals with all the people that I lost on my journey through Less Than Jake and my musical career. And it's a song, In Memoriam, in tribute to everyone that I lost. And this is not a pre-order right now. You can go to ChristaMakesABook.com. That'll redirect you to the Smart Punk Records site. All items are in hand. We got the 7-inch record. We got a shot glass. We got a back patch, all kinds of other cool little merch items. So head over to ChristaMakesABook.com to get yours. They'll ship right away. I want to thank this week's guest, Eric Bazillion from the Hooters, for stopping by. It was a lot of fun. And we're going to leave you with a song from the 7-inch. This one's called In Memoriam.
Schwartz.
And I'm Flynn McClain. Together we host None But the Brave, a podcast dedicated to the music and career of Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce and E Street Band are on tour right now for the first time in 6 years, and we're taking a detailed look at what's happening on stage in our bi-weekly episodes.
We've also been recently joined by some very exciting guests, including rock journalist Warren Zanes and Stephen Hayden, Backstreet's magazine founder Charles Cross, and Barstool's Kirk Menahan.
If you're a diehard Springsteen fan, this is the show for you.
So please subscribe to None But the Brave on your favorite podcasting platform, and we hope to see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much! We'll be seeing you!
Bowie, Dylan, Marley. You've heard the names and maybe you've heard their songs, but what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally loved and important? Join me, Josh Adam Myers, host of The 500, as each week I go through a different album from Rolling Stone Magazine's 500 Greatest Albums list from 2012 with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians talking about how the music has impacted their lives. New episodes of The 500 come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.